Part 4. Hark, you shadows that in darkness dwell, learn to condemn light. Happy, happy they that in hell feel not the world's despite. Epilogue. The trial of Jason Taverner for the first-degree murder of Alice Buckman mysteriously backfired, ending with a verdict of not guilty, due in part to the excellent legal help NBC and Bill Wolfer provided, but due also to the fact that Taverner had committed no crime. There had, in fact, been no crime, and the original coroner's finding was reversed, accompanied by the retirement of the coroner and his replacement by a younger man. Jason Taverner's TV ratings, which had dropped to a low point during the trial, rose with the verdict, and Taverner found himself with an audience of 35 million rather than 30. The house which Felix Buckman and his sister Alice had owned and occupied drifted along in a nebulous legal status for several years. Alice had willed her part of the equity to a lesbian organization called the Sons of Carebron, with headquarters in Lee's Summit, Missouri, and the society wished to make the house into a retreat for their several saints. In March of 2003, Buckman sold his share of the equity to the Sons of Carebron, and with the money derived, moved himself and all the items of his many collections to Borneo, where living was cheap and the police amiable. Experiments with the multiple space inclusion drug KR3 were abandoned late in 1992 due to its toxic qualities. However, for several years the police covertly experimented with it on inmates in forced labor camps. But ultimately, due to the general widespread hazards involved, the director ordered the project abandoned. Kathy Nelson learned and accepted a year later that her husband Jack had been long dead, as McNulty had told her. The recognition of this precipitated a blatant psychotic break in her, and she again was hospitalized, this time for good, at a far less stylish psychiatric hospital than Morningside. For the 51st and final time in her life, Ruth Ray married, in this terminal instance, to an elderly, wealthy, pot-bellied importer of firearms located in Lower New Jersey, barely operating within the limit of the law. In the spring of 1994, she died of an overdose of alcohol taken with a new tranquilizer, phenazine, which acts as a central nervous system depressant, as well as suppressing the vagus nerve. At the time of her death, she weighed 92 pounds, the result of difficult and chronic psychological problems. It never became possible to certify with any clarity the death as either an accident or a deliberate suicide. After all, the medication was relatively new. Her husband, Jake Mongo, at the time of her death had become heavily in debt and outlasted her barely a year. Jason Taverner attended her funeral, and at the later graveside ceremony, met a girlfriend of Ruth's named Faye Crankite, with whom he presently formed a working relationship that lasted 2 years. From her, Jason learned that Ruth Ray had periodically attached herself to the Phone Grid sex network. Learning this, he understood better why she had become as she had when he met her in Vegas. Cynical and aging, Heather Hart gradually abandoned her singing career and dropped out of sight. After a few tries to locate her, Jason Taverner gave up and wrote it off as one of the better successes of his life, despite its dreary ending. He heard, too, that Marianne Dominic had won a major international prize for her ceramic kitchenware, but he never bothered to trace her down. Monica Buff, however, showed up in his life toward the end of 1998, as unkempt as ever, but still attractive in her grubby way. Jason dated her a few times and then dumped her. For months she wrote him odd, long letters with cryptic signs drawn over the words, but that too stopped at last, and for this he was glad. In the Warrens, under the ruins of the great universities, the student populations gradually gave up their futile attempts to maintain life as they understood it, and voluntarily, for the most part, entered forced labor camps. So the dregs of the Second Civil War gradually ebbed away, and in 2004, as a pilot model, Columbia University was rebuilt, and a safe, sane student body allowed to attend its police-sanctioned courses. Toward the end of his life, retired Police General Felix Buckman, living in Borneo on his pension, wrote an autobiographical exposé of the planet-wide police apparatus, the book soon being circulated illegally throughout the major cities of Earth. For this, in the summer of 2017, General Buckman was shot by an assassin, never identified, and no arrests were ever made. His book, The Law and Order Mentality, continued to clandestinely circulate for a number of years after his death, but even that, too, eventually became forgotten. The forced labor camps dwindled away and at last ceased to exist. The police apparatus became, by degrees over the decades, too cumbersome to threaten anyone, and in 2136 the rank of police marshal was abandoned. Some of the bondage cartoons that Alice Buckman had collected during her aborted life found their way into museums displaying artifacts of faded-out popular cultures, and ultimately she became officially identified by the Librarian's Journal Quarterly as the foremost authority of the late 20th century in the matter of S&M art. The $1 black Trans-Mississippi postage stamp, which Felix Buckman had laid on her, was bought at auction in 1999 by a dealer from Warsaw, Poland. It disappeared thereupon into the hazy world of philately, never to surface again. Barney Buckman, the son of Felix and Alice Buckman, grew eventually into difficult manhood, joined the New York police, and during his second year as a beat cop fell from a substandard fire escape while responding to a report of burglary in a tenement where wealthy blacks had once lived. Paralyzed from the waist down at 23, he began to interest himself in old television commercials, and before long owned an impressive library of the most ancient and sought-after items of this sort, which he bought and sold and traded shrewdly. He lived a long life, with only a feeble memory of his father and no memory at all of Alice. By and large, Barney Buckman complained little, and continued in particular to absorb himself in old-time Alka-Seltzer plugs, his specialty out of all the rest of such golden trivia. Someone at the Los Angeles Police Academy stole the .22 Derringer pistol which Felix Buckman had kept in his desk, and with this the gun vanished forever. Lead slug weapons had by that time become generally extinct except as collector's pieces, and the inventory clerk at the academy, whose job it was to keep track of the Derringer, assumed wisely that it had become a prop in the bachelor's quarters of some minor police official, and let the investigation drop there. In 2047, Jason Taverner, long since retired from the entertainment field, died in an exclusive nursing home of acolic fibrosis, an ailment acquired by Terrans at various Martian colonies, privately maintained for dubious enthrallment of the weary rich. His estate consisted of a 5-bedroom house in Des Moines, filled mostly with memorabilia, and many shares of stock in a corporation which had tried and failed to finance a commercial shuttle service to Proxima Centaurus. His passing was not generally noticed, although small obit squibs appeared in most metropolitan newspapers, ignored by the TV news people, but not by Marianne Dominic, who even in her 80s still considered Jason Taverner a celebrity, and her meeting him an important milestone in her long and successful life. The blue vase made by Marianne Dominic and purchased by Jason Taverner as a gift for Heather Hart wound up in a private collection of modern pottery. It remains there to this day and is much treasured. And in fact, by a number of people who know ceramics, openly and genuinely cherished and loved. This concludes the reading of Flow My Tears, the Policeman Said, by Philip K. Dick. Copyright 1974 by Philip K. Dick. This book was read by Scott Brick. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Vintage Books, a division of Random House, Inc., and was produced in 2007 by Blackstone Audio, Incorporated, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Incorporated. If you would like to obtain a complete catalog of our titles or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD and MP3 CD, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com.
Thank you.